Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
Tristan Jones.
Marcy Gonzalez.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement. Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to discuss season 4, episode 7 of the HBO series Succession. The episode's titled Tailgate Party. And Marcy, let's start off. What are your overall thoughts on episode 7 of Succession?
Overall thoughts, wasn't like one of my favorite episodes of the season, but it wasn't a bad episode at all. We did get some really great scenes. Tom and Shiv also got some scenes with Mattson that were pretty good. Cousin Greg, of course, is always kind of serving up some weird shit. So, overall, it was an okay episode. Excited to kind of get into some of the things that we saw.
Yeah, we'll do that very soon. Tristan, what overall thoughts?
It was absolutely one of my favorite episodes of the season. Like I said, I mean, nothing really big happened, but I feel like a bunch of big stuff happened, right? Like, not the overtly big things, but there's some powder keg things there that are going to explode in these last three episodes. So I loved it. I love the dialogue. The Tom and Shiv scene is probably going to be like the gold standard for this episode, like going forward. But just every time we get all these characters in one place, like magic always happens. And I think that happened on Sunday. So yeah, definitely one of my favorite episodes of the seasons. One, I couldn't wait to rewatch it today. Like Marcy said, I'm excited to let's dive in. Let's do it.
Well, the episode was titled Tailgate Party, but you know, didn't seem like there was a whole lot of fun being had. I mean, maybe Cousin Greg, maybe Kendall. We'll talk about that later. But it wasn't a lot of fun for the hosts of the party, which the premise was it's the day before the election and the Roys had this traditional party they host for like political insiders, and they're hosting it at Tom and Shiv's house or their apartment home in New York. And yeah, let's get ready to Tom and Shiv. They have a classic, like knockdown, drag them out kind of scene outside their apartment. Marcy, take it away. What'd you think about that?
I thought it was a hard scene to watch, just knowing the emotion that those characters were feeling. And a lot of it had been brewing for just the years that they have together and just all the things that have been happening between them. But I think what really set it off for Shiv was that present that Tom gave her that didn't really seem like a present. It was more of a backhanded compliment when he gave her that scorpion and said, well, you're kind of like a scorpion, ha ha. And obviously she's like, that's a weird kind of joke. Like, what do you really mean? But it was definitely difficult to watch, but you can definitely understand how they got to that point. Just kind of laying it all out, years and years of things that they haven't processed, they haven't said, came out. You know, Tom was like, hey, you were about to send me off to fucking prison and you were okay with that. And, you know, Shiv was saying, like, you only married me for my DNA. You just, you know, wanted to get a leg in. Very, very difficult. But I think we've all either known about a relationship or been in a relationship where you know that it's time to just get everything out there. So I think it was definitely necessary for them. I think it was sad, but I definitely don't think there's any coming back from that. I don't think we see a happy ending for Tom and Shiv together.
There's definitely no coming back from that. Some of the worst insults really that we've heard on this show, because they're not told, it weren't meant through like jest. Like all the insults for the most part that we see outside of like the contempt that Logan had for his kids, like, were meant in some type of jest, you know, to make fun of, to ridicule. This was like, the things that they were saying were like carefully sharpened knives that they had been sharpening for some years, since season one, possibly before that. You know, we can only imagine the way that Shiv talked and treated Tom before they got married, before they, you know, while they were just dating, right? We just see like the engagement, at the beginning. But that was a scene, man. Like, oftentimes when we have two characters and there's like this underlying tension, we as a viewer see it and we can diagnose it, but it's always kind of mysterious to think, like, do the characters themselves feel that same tension, right? Do they see this brewing? And, you know, when Tom said, let's clear the air, like they cleared the air, which tells me that either there's 0% chance that they come back from that, or by clearing the air, maybe they can at least start to build, you know, at least get into like the process of building a real relationship that's, you know, based on honesty and some type of trust and mutual respect. I wonder how possible that is, but like those are the only two options, right? Either it's dead on arrival, where it is, or like they actually have a real chance for something special down the line. But that scene, like, first of all, shout out to them for like the doors or like the windows. Like, nobody, I kept looking in the actual park while they were arguing, like nobody even batted an eye. Like, yeah. Nobody's here. It's like, that was completely soundproof. Like, they should have a studio out there. I heard this somewhere else, but I was thinking of it while I was watching it, but it reminded me a little bit of like The Wire, Stringer Bell and Avon, you know, also on a balcony, where they kind of clear the air about how they feel about each other. Certainly not as, you know, verbally violent as this one was, but it's also one of those series defining conversations. Yeah. And I think like the creator, Jesse Armstrong, he's been arguing really since season two that Tom and Shiv's relationship is kind of like the bedrock of this series. Like, it is like the moral center of the series. Like, the very questions that Tom and Shiv are arguing about and really asking themselves, like basically love versus money, is the same thing everybody else is asking. Like, do I want to be respected by these people, or do I want some type of upward mobility, you know, financially, work-wise, residentially, whatever. So, yeah, I thought that was a series-defining moment, a series-defining scene between Tom and Shiv. And I mean, I'm super anxious to see where that relationship goes in these last three episodes.
Yeah. Like you said, it obviously it's been building up over the four seasons, but in this episode, you could see something was going to come to the head, because you had, they're hosting this party, you know, at the party, you have the brothers who, you know, Shiv's brothers, who are obviously, they're playing their side. Madsen shows up. He wasn't really invited. I mean, he was invited by Logan before his death, but he wasn't really invited to this event. Madsen shows up. So Shiv's playing, you know, both sides, like she's done the last couple episodes, and it kind of blows up in her face. And we'll get more into that in a little bit. But as far as with Tom, you know, Madsen makes a comment that kind of circulates throughout the party about how, you know, oh, you know, once I buy Waystar Royco, there's going to be major leadership changes at ATN. And of course, Tom is one of the heads of ATN. So that certainly points that he's going to be fired. And that becomes the rumor mill at the party. Everyone's talking to him about how he's going to be fired. And he, you know, he talks about how he's so worn down in the episode anyway, before we even get to that. And then after hearing from all these people over and over at his own house, like, yeah, so what do you got coming up next? Because you're not going to be here much longer. He finally like loses it, you know, like, and then, I mean, to me, the kind of coming back, like there's no way they're going to come back from this line, was when he said, you know, he mentioned that she was obviously selfish, but then he said, you know, you're incapable of love. And I think you're maybe not a good person to have children. And of course we know she's pregnant, which she hasn't told anybody still. I mean, we only have three episodes left. She found out, I mean, she's known for a while, but we found out in episode four. I think the way she's feeling, I don't know that we're going to have a reconciliation between the two. Marcy, what do you think about that?
No. I don't know if those were their true feelings or they just said a lot of those things because they were angry, but right, the saying is you can't unring a bell, you can't unsay those things, because whether you meant them or not, that person still heard them and it affects that person in, you know, some type of way. Those were very harsh words that they both said to one another. I mean, just hearing like, you're incapable of love, you're not a good person to have kids, when you're already expecting a kid from that person that just said that, like, you are not a good person to have kids with. I think that's very difficult. I also think it's difficult to hear, you know, if you're Tom, that, you know, you didn't really love me, you were just you know, pretending to love me or wanting to be with me because of my family or because of what I could bring to you, you know, that proximity to power. So I don't think that there's any coming back for them, which makes me think like Shiv may not tell Tom if she is pregnant, or if he does find out, she may like hide it or, you know, pretend that it's somebody else's. So I don't think that we're done with like the lying or scheming or conniving on, you know, their parts. Because again, like if he finds out, she might fear that he might try to take the kid away from her if he thinks like she's not capable of having a child, or he's just going to see it as a way again to stay with her and then to be able to have that access to that power and to that money, which she thinks is all that matters to him.
And be clear, everything they said about each other for the most part was correct.
Yeah.
Shiv is incapable of love. And, you know, mostly not her fault. Like, she had shitty parents, which affected, as Tom said, like the way that she views herself. I think he said it was so thin. And Tom is docile and servile, and he is willing to sacrifice his dignity, the respect of the people around him for a chance at some type of leg up. He, you know, he's all but admitted that. So like it's should he have said that? No, you absolutely shouldn't have said that, right? Should you be giving that much thought? Like, probably not either. But the crazy thing about all those insults is that if they would have said all those things in therapy at a smaller tone, it would have went over a lot better. Like, hey, I think that, you know, because of your upbringing and the difficult and, you know, strained relationship that you had and have with your parents, I think it's affected the way that you receive and give love. Like, it's saying the same thing, right? But because they've skipped over so many of like the healthy ways that you resolve conflict and you know, issues within a marriage or a relationship, all they have are the insults. That's the way that they communicate, right? It's either through, you know, all these sexual innuendos through text or whatever, or it's like this biting, the bitey game. Like that their whole marriage is the bitey game. That's why, like, that shit was so on the nose. Like, it was brilliant writing. It was, you know, a brilliant scene, you know, the bitey game shit, but it was completely on the nose because that's their relationship, you know, to a T.
Yeah, I mean, it's a messy situation, to say the least. It's, I just wonder, like, we only have 3 episodes left, and I don't think anything is going to be resolved really with this show. I mean, I think the election probably won't be resolved. I think we're kind of setting it up for kind of a, you know, real world is kind of like a Stranger Than Fiction kind of storyline with that too. So I can definitely see this show ending with her not telling Tom about the being pregnant. I can see the company not getting, you know, the Waystar Gojo acquisition either way. And we'll get into that in a little bit, but I can see that not being resolved. I just think this show is, it's just so messy. And this party was like another perfect example of just all these people, you know, getting in it. You know, like I said, not a lot of people are having a lot of fun. I mean, it was fun for us to watch because they're so great to get these different pairings of characters and to see them, you know, trying to make moves and make deals and do whatever they think they have to do to keep their power. But yeah, this is just a really, really messy situation. And I don't see it getting resolved before the season finale. But so at the party, you had Kendall and Roman, who their plan going into the party was they're trying to build this like antitrust case against Gojo, right? So they're trying to, they're inviting all these people. They want to get people who have regulatory power to take a look at this deal and go, hey, there's obviously some red flags here. We're going to try to muck this up. We're going to, you know, do whatever it takes to get this not to happen. And one of the people that was invited to the party was Nate, who we met Nate in season 2 or season 1. season one. Okay. And Nate is a, he is a, you know, I didn't really remember everything from his, I know he was like a former lover of Shiv, but apparently he had a relationship with Kendall also. Like he, they, I guess they had a friendly.
He was the Democratic operative, part of the campaign for Gil, whatever his last name was. And now he's pretty much same role, Democratic operative for, just forgot his name. Jimenez,
yeah. Jimenez. So you've got that factor, which, you know, Shiv has to tell Tom, you know, she's saying, hey, Madsen's actually going to come, because once she found out the plan from her brother, she's got to counteract that plan by inviting Madsen, telling him, hey, they're going to go with this regulations play. So you've got to be here so that you can mingle and interact with these same people that they're going to talk to and try to, you know, counteract that. And again, like I said, Nate is one of these people. And that also was part of what was kind of seeming like driving a wedge between Tom and Shiv, because obviously Tom knows Nate's past with Shiv. And so she has to tell him, hey, we're inviting Nate. We're inviting Madsen, but we're also going to invite Nate. You can tell he's a little taken aback, but then he's like, oh, whatever, you know, it's fine. Because at that point, they're still good. But for Tom, you can see it was a lot of stuff in this episode kind of built up to what we saw in that scene on the balcony. Marcy, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Tom is just, I think, very insecure. So maybe he's like, yeah, I'll, you know, make this kind of work again with Shiv. And then he finds out that Madsen is coming, and he knows that Shiv is kind of had like conversations one-on-one with Madsen. So he may not know, like, what are they plotting? Is it like business plotting? Is it just kind of like flirty stuff going on? So I think he's unsure about that. And then again, just knowing that Nate's going to be there, I think that just kind of, again, makes him feel more insecure. So not only is he insecure about Shiv, he's also insecure about his job and his standing at ATN. So I think that just kind of sets everything in motion. And then he kept on talking about how tired he was even before all of that. So I was just worried for Tom. I was like, is Tom okay? Because we've seen in other shows where, you know, people will drop like little things like, oh, I'm tired, and say it, you know, enough. And then we find out that they're sick or they're dying. So I got a little bit worried for Tom when he kept on talking about how tired he was.
Yeah. Tom is my, we were talking before recording, who, you know, anybody else could possibly die in this season, in these last three episodes. My bet is on Tom, if somebody does die. It's not just this season. We go back to season two, you know, where he's half-heartedly volunteering to go to prison for everybody. Like, he's vowing to take the fall for a bunch of people who don't really respect him. Like, and he understands that, like, this is a longstanding like stress that's been building up within Tom. And we get to season four, obviously he and Shiv are separated. And when they come back together, it's really only through like a sexual lens. So like they still haven't resolved a lot of the fissures that is killing their relationship. And they're just kind of like papering over it with sex, right? Like, it's not really discussing like the things that have caused Tom so much hurt and stress. And Shiv, to a much lesser degree, she doesn't, you know, outwardly show the stress that she's had from that marriage, but it's causing some stress on her too, because I think deep down she wants to love Tom in a certain way, but she just doesn't know how. So the only way that she knows how to do that is by hurting him, right? The same thing her mother said about Logan. He hasn't met something that he didn't love that he wouldn't kick, you know, just to see if it will come back. Yeah. And that's where she's at with Tom. But the rub is she doesn't have anybody else but Tom, right? So what we see at the end of this episode, she's completely all alone. Like, her brothers have shut her out. She's working. He's actively working against her brothers, stupidly. We'll talk about. And the only person that's stable for her, that she knows she can come back to, or will come back to her, is Tom. But like, so there's all that dichotomy. And with Tom, when you're that person for somebody else, when you're that person who somebody knows, I can depend on this person, but they can't reciprocate it, that's an extra layer of stress. So Tom has stress at home. He has work-related stress because, one, he does not have the respect of his colleagues. He doesn't really have the respect of his superiors, his subordinates. There's this acquisition going in with this guy that does not respect him at all and is probably going to fire him. Most likely is going to fire him. And you know your wife is working within that. Everywhere he goes, he gets it. The only person who really he could use as an anchor is dead, right? Like, so where is Tom getting the relief from? So you have all these things going on. He's the head of ATN right before an election, which he, like I said, I'm pre-tired. Like, I understand that. I completely understand being pre-tired. Like Sunday nights, I'm like, God damn, I'll be exhausted tomorrow when I come home, right? And you just understand it. But that also adds a layer of stress. Like when you know you're going to be tired and you know you have to do the thing that's going to make you tired, it adds, it like doubles the stress. So Tom is going through it at such a high level. Like he was last season, he was pretty flipping out on Greg, flipping over tables and shit. Like, we've been seeing a meltdown coming from Tom really since season one. And he's played the good soldier. He's played like the servile, you know, son-in-law, the servile brother-in-law and all these things. It's come to a head. I don't think he can play that role anymore without it effectively killing him at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough times for Tom. No doubt. He even lost, seems like he's lost the respect of Greg. You know, he like Greg last episode was, you know, basically telling him how bad his speech was going to be. And, you know, this whole season, you've kind of seen kind of Greg kind of push back. And in this episode, Greg, we'll talk about him for a little bit. He, he first greets Madsen. Madsen calls him Gary, which is a, you know, just an awesome, like, you know, not remembering the guy's name, way to put him down. You know, Madsen's there with his whole crew. He's got Oscar. He's got Ebba. And Greg kind of wiggles his way into a little, you know, sitting with the Swedes. And Madsen's talking about how, you know, he's given Ebba a hard time, saying how she's like, she has like social anxiety. She's this PR person, but she hates being around people. And, you know, she hates being at parties and all this kind of stuff. And he kind of, Madsen jokes about firing her, which joking about firing people is a common theme of this show, especially this season. But, you know, he talks about joking, you know, firing Ebba. Ebba gets upset. She kind of storms away. And then Greg tells Madsen, hey, I could do that for you, you know, because as we saw in the beginning of the episode, Greg just fired, you know, a dozen or more, 25 people from ATN. He basically was Tom's butcher. He just, you know, in a virtual meeting, just let him go. And so Greg is kind of selling himself to Madsen and saying that, you know, like, you know, I can do this for you. He's like, you know, HR says that I'm the right guy for the job because I look like I care, but I don't. I like how Madsen, he's like, oh, all right, Mr. Nephew. And he refers to him as a slim reaper. And I don't know. It was just a great moment for Greg. Greg is trying to find his way to power every which way. And him interacting with Madsen, I thought was comedy gold. Marcy, what'd you get out of that?
Yeah, I like that part too. And I think like we've just seen Greg's character arc again, like from where he started to now. He's leveled up a lot, just kind of by being able to be ruthless or being able to be quiet or being able to be silent or being able to do whatever is needed at that time. It hasn't gone overlooked. And, you know, I think Madsen is maybe starting to respect him just a little bit, maybe even more so than he does Tom, which is not saying a lot, but that was a great scene, especially like Ebba, you know, was super pissed off at the end. So she just kind of walked away and just kind of left those three idiots there by themselves talking to themselves. But yeah, Greg in the firing scene was hilarious to me. Not hilarious because that does happen in real life. Yeah. We've seen you know, lots of reports of that actually happening in real life to people logging on to a Teams call or a Zoom call and just getting fired. But it was funny how they were able to incorporate things that have been happening in corporate America into this episode. And just Greg's delivery was great. Again, he was just kind of like very cut and dry, very cutthroat. And then, you know, it's like, oh, yes, this is a very sad situation. Let me keep on reading. So I love the delivery of that. And then Tom in the background just kind of being like, okay, like, let's speed it up again. Like, he doesn't give a shit. Like, he's not getting fired. But, you know, how the tables have turned after he finds out that he might be on the chopping block. So, you know, and Tom is also kind of sexting with Shiv at the same time. So gold star for Tom for being able to multitask the sexting and the firing, you know, two dozen people. I'm interested to see like what more we get from Greg this season. And again, like you've mentioned, he's able to just kind of wiggle his way into power. Like he was able to wiggle himself onto that note that Logan left. Like, we don't know why he just decided to scribble Greg on it, but it just kind of shows how he can just pop up in unexpected places for whatever reason.
I think, well, first of all, with Greg, I noticed on a second watch, he does the same thing I do when I'm reading something and like something distracts me and I just start repeating the same thing. Like, whoa, let's go right back. Like, imagine being on the other side of that. Like, hey, can you come on with this? Like, you know, I think Greg continues to find out, or at least it's confirmed for Greg, that for him, his way, his access to power is through ruthlessness. Right? Like, go back to what Tom told him at the end of season 3. He's like, hey, if you come with me, it literally means giving up your soul. Right? And what did Greg say? Like, who needs a soul anyway? Right? Like, who needs that? So I think he's tried to upwardly mobilize through some form of decency, or he doesn't really have a lot of merit to go off of. He's tried, you know, kissing ass, he's tried wittiness. None of those things really work. The way to power in that world is through ruthlessness, yeah. Essentially. And the parallels, like Marcy said, like Tom is kind of brazen about the firing of other people. Well, man, it ain't no fun when the rabbit's got the gun. Like, his head is literally on a chopping block, you know, and it's been on a chopping block all season. Really, since last season. But also with Greg, Greg's arc continues to like pay dividends in ways that we don't like really see. Because Greg comes into the room with Madsen and Oscar and Ebba, and because he pretty much just joins into like this ruthless boys club to pick on and bully this woman, she ends up leaving.
Yeah.
And those feelings lead to her spilling some like really pertinent information about Max and Gojo as a whole.
Yeah.
And here we are, like, now Kendall and Roman have a new weapon to kind of play against him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just to kind of put a pin on Greg, Madsen said, I thought you were backwashed at the bottom of the gene pool, but you're the real deal. But, you know, speaking of you know, someone who's not the real deal apparently is Madsen. And as Tristan was saying, you know, by pissing off Ebba, then, you know, Kendall and Roman go find her and have a smoke with her and talk with her. And they find out that, yeah, there's some of Madsen's numbers aren't working out so well. And that was such a great scene where, you know, they find out that, you know, he's inflated these Gojo subscriber numbers in India, and which obviously, you know, his company is not worth what he says it is, which, you know, is a perfect way for Kendall to try to get out of the deal. You know, he's trying all these different ways to get out of the deal. And, you know, so far Kendall is like, he's handling himself really well. I mean, even with his encounter with Madsen, and this is part of what Kendall does well, is like we mentioned in the last episode with the presentation, he's a showman. I mean, you know, Roman calls him the greatest showman as a joke in the beginning, but like, he handles himself very well in front of an audience. And, you know, after finding out that the numbers don't add up on the subscriber numbers in India. You know, Kendall kind of calls out Mattson in the middle of the party, and they're talking back and forth about, you know, kind of giving each other a hard time about, you know, oh, like, you know, because last episode Kendall was, as Shiv said, he was Waystar Jesus. He was offering eternal life and, you know, with Living Plus. And Mattson's kind of giving him a hard time about, oh, you know, can't wait to see your estimates. And that's when Kendall's like, oh, yeah, but they're just estimates. But you, like, your numbers, man, your numbers are almost literally unbelievable. And, you know, just like going back and forth at him. And you can see, like, Kendall is getting the upper hand of this guy. He got the upper hand last week. He did it at the party. It's really like Mattson, you know, as you can tell, as we find out, he's a bullshitter. And Kendall, one of my favorite lines in the whole episode, he's like, when he finds out about the India numbers, he's like, I knew he was a bullshitter. I'm telling you, new money. You got to hold those fresh bills to the light. Like, I love that line. It's so great. But in talking about the India deal, Marcy, what did you think about the conversation that Shiv had? Once Shiv finds out that the India numbers are bullshit, then we get this funny back and forth between Shiv and Mattson, because now, you know, she's hitched her wagon to him also. And she's realizing this is not a good move for her. But what did you think about her, you know, asking him about India and his like explanation about the numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this part of the episode was like fuck around and find out time. First, like Mattson, fuck around with Ebba and you'll find out what she'll be able to say about you. Like, she has your secret. She knows where the bodies are buried. And then for Shiv to, like, you know, she was underhanded. She went behind her brother's backs because she knew that they would betray her. So she wanted to betray them first. Well, again, fuck around and find out. Like, you may have hitched your wagon to bullshit. So now, like, you have to figure out what's going to happen. So I think that also just kind of rammed her up for that fight with Tom. But yeah, it was just kind of like realizing, like, shit, like, I tried to get the upper hand on my brothers. This is probably not going to end well for me. And then, like, he's just so, like, nonchalant about it. You know, she's like, hey, like, your numbers, India, they look bad. And he's like, well, no, like, they don't look off, you know, if there were two Indias, which obviously there's not. So he was as nonchalant as I would expect a millionaire to be about something that, like, is very important. But to them, like, they have a ton of money, so they don't give a shit. Like, rules, laws, we can break them. We have enough money to be able to get away with it. So just his whole kind of like demeanor after she found out about it was just kind of like, okay, like, this is what I would expect from like really rich people who really don't know that consequences exist.
Yeah. And, you know, he tells her that she can fix it. All she's got to do is build another India. So just build another India.
I like how he immediately just kind of cowered when she brought up the numbers. He was like, what do you mean? Like, India? Like, this is something that's been sitting on his brain. He knew what she was talking about. Shiv Roy, once again, flying too close to the sun.
Yep.
Like, she simply has not learned his lesson. I mean, honestly, this is a episode where, again, neither of these kids have learned their lesson in different ways. Kendall, on a business side, I think he's learned some lessons and he's applying those and he's gotten a little bit better. Like, we saw with the Living Plus thing, hell, even like in parts of like the negotiation that he and Roman were having with Mattson in the mountains, he was starting to get a little bit of upper hand before Roman just kind of, you know, impulsive Roman. And I think he gets the better of Mattson in this episode here. On the flip side, here's my quick fuck with Kendall Roy rant. He could not have handled that interaction with Rava any worse.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Any worse.
Yeah.
I mean, he immediately, like, Rava is telling him that Sophie, their daughter, had a racist microaggression with some dude wearing a Ravenhead shirt. And Kendall immediately starts to blame Rava. Where were you? You know, he gets into the self-righteous bullshit of like, hey, you don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing this for the sake of our children. to make the world a better place, paralleling what Logan said in the little fake therapy session in season one, two, whatever. He could not have handled that any worse. That was like, that is a some piece of shit things, right? And that's Kendall. Like, as much progress as he makes in one area of his life, he always falters in the other because Kendall doesn't fully know himself, right? Roman is impulsive and as emotionally advanced as he is over his siblings, there's still a level of emotional intelligence that he will never reach because he just refuses to like admit these things and like make them real. And Shiv just always chooses the wrong horse. Like, constantly chooses the wrong horse because she overvalues her own talent, right? And her own ways of like manipulating situations. Like, this is these three are bound to repeat their mistakes because they refuse to be real with themselves and real with each other. So as you know, Madsen, as she's realizing in real time, yeah, that she's hitched her horse or hitched her wagon to a horse that is not real and is going to blow up in her face in some type of way. Like, what is her recoil? Like, again, like you said, this leads to her blowing up on Tom. Both of them have the stress coming from different areas that only leads back to each other. Like, they can only blow up at each other because she can't go back to her brothers and say, hey, I've been kind of just manipulating this situation in this type of way, telling them this, I found out this, and now we're fucked, right? Like, she just kind of has to play both sides. Yeah. And again, this is kind of just what she gets. Like, you can tell, like, the second that she starts talking to him about those numbers, like, the music intensifies. Like, I had a caption on, it was like, ominous music. I was like, yeah, you're fucking right. Like, this is going to be really bad. And he's just trying to paper over it, like, hey, like, we just get this deal done and, you know, it all go away. Like, he's really unserious, and which is so ironic because all the memes going around about unserious people are about Shiv, Roman, and Kendall, right, where Madsen's just as unserious. He's not even a coder. Like who really is who they are in his show? Everybody's kind of living behind these fake personas. So Shiv, again, flying too close to the sun. And just to kind of put a pin on it, like, at some point, these siblings will have to learn that their way to some type of success is with each other. And until they realize that, these things are going to continue to happen. Roman is going to continue to make really bad, impulsive decisions that are going to cost him, cost the company, cost the family. Kendall is, he just doesn't know who he is. So he's going to continue to put himself in situations to not be taken seriously. And we already talked about Shiv.
Yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. These characters, all of them, you can question their business skills and their sense of business and their expertise. But we all know that the Roys can kind of fake it till they make it. They can use their name. That's fine. Obviously, Madsen is kind of in a similar boat. He's got some hype behind him, but there's not a lot of there, you know, when you really break it down. But these people, their people skills are so bad. Like, none of them have good, like, social interaction. Like, they're just not good at any of that stuff. And you really see that. Like, you mentioned the scene with Rava. It was just like, you know, we haven't seen Rava or the kids since, like, what? Did we see him in season three at all? Like, early season three, maybe? Like,
weddings.
Okay. Oh, the yeah. Okay. Okay. But you never hear, they're never referenced. I mean, his son's name is Iverson. How do we not hear Iverson's name dropped every once in a while? Because, like, that's just kind of a cool, it's a cool name for a kid.
I really wanted to name my son Iverson. I was begging to name my son Iverson. Got voted down. Iverson or Hardaway?
Or Hardaway. Gotcha. But, yeah, these people they're bad at being people. They're just really bad at being people. And that's not really a question for y'all. You just see it every episode, but moving on with the story. So after, you know, finding out that Madsen's full of shit, Kendall, he's trying to seize the opportunity and he goes to Frank and proposes that, you know, let's run a reverse Viking where we pillage their village. Waystar buys Gojo. We eat Madsen's lunch. We become bigger than Dad ever was. And I think it's, you know, this is not a surprise, but Frank asked the question, well, what about Roman and Shiv? And Kendall says, I love them, but I'm not in love with them. He's like, you know, one head, one crown. So Kendall trying to get what he always wanted. Marcy, what do you think about potentially Kendall becoming king?
I mean, Kendall always has lofty goals. They haven't always worked out for him. They haven't ever worked out for him so far. Obviously, he's still here, having a lot of issues. And he's only there because his dad has died, right? It's not, you know, by any like good work that he was able to do on his own. You know what? I hope that works out for him. I hope that he's able to work with Frank and work with the rest of the board and just, you know, be able to take Gojo. Like, I would love to see some sort of happy ending for Kendall, just because, you know, he's our number one boy. He's had a very, very difficult time. Do I think that's going to happen? No, probably not. I think that's probably going to be another thing that blows up in his face somehow. But it will be interesting and fun to watch. But we knew that the whole like co-CEOs, CE bros thing wasn't going to work out, right? Like, it seldom works out. You definitely need one person to be the chief executive. It doesn't really work when you have two people that are on the same footing. So it'll be interesting to see what Roman does when he hears about this, you know, new development. But no, I don't have any high hopes that this is going to work out for poor Kendall.
It's so predictable while also being disappointing, because like I said, if you've been a watcher of this show since season one and you've kind of seen it week to week, the conclusion we all should have drawn is that, hey, if you guys work together and like really blend in the things that y'all do well and are honest about the things that y'all don't do well. They tried to do this at the beginning of the season, and it lasted all of what, three episodes maybe? Like, you guys can like really prosper. You could really do something. I don't know what that something is. I don't know how big a scale that something is. Y'all can do something to where at least y'all are taken seriously. This is gonna blow up in Kendall's face. I don't think it's a bad idea. Yeah. I just think the mechanisms that Kendall is going to use, is already starting to use, have traditionally and historically not worked for him, which is like this single-minded goal of being the top guy and shutting out your siblings. Whereas none of them on merit have any like definitive claim to have the top spot. Like, they have to be honest about that and say, hey, maybe let's work together. Let's, you know, build our experience. Let's, you know, have somebody who's done this be in charge for a limited amount of time, and then one of us takes over. Like, that's just kind of the standard. It's like the Facebook thing. Like, hey, we're going to put somebody who's done this, you know, Yahoo CEO, put this person in charge. When the time is right, we'll hop in and do that. None of them are real enough with each other and real enough with themselves to do that. So this is why this is going to blow up in Kendall's face, right? With that said, the show is positioned as a Waystar versus Gojo thing, or a Kendall slash Logan slash Roman versus Madsen. Whereas really what this episode showed me is like, this is a tale of two marriages, right? Obviously Tom Shiv, but like Waystar and Gojo is a toxic marriage as well for different reasons. Like, again, same thing. People aren't being honest with each other. There's this inherent contempt between these two sides. And there's just no way that this ends up good, whether it be Gojo acquiring Waystar or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, I like, you know, Kendall, his aspirations, or, you know, that he wants to be the number one, he wants to be the top dog. But you're right, like, he'll mess it up. You just know he will. But of the three, he is the one who will, you know, grab the brass ring or try for it. Like, he'll go for it. But, you know, it's really interesting because the episode ends with him. Well, that part ends with him asking Frank if he'll help him. Now, Frank has always been on his side. Marcy, do you think Frank's on his side, or do you think Frank is going to take this information to the board and try to, I mean, now granted, Kendall gave him the information that, that Gojo or Mattson is full of shit, not worth what he says he's worth. So, but do you think that Frank is on Kendall's side? Like, it seems like he's been for the entire series.
At first it seemed like he wasn't going to be. At first it just seemed like he was thinking it was another one of like Kendall's, you know, plans to derail the deal. And, you know, he's all for the deal so he can get paid, of course. But I think after just kind of Kendall talked to him a little bit and was like, hey, like, we just need one person at the top, insinuating that it was going to be him. And, you know, I think Frank thought like, okay, like maybe I, you know, like maybe I could follow you. Yes. Like we could be bigger than Gojo and bigger than Logan was. I think maybe that piqued his interest a little bit because you could see it on his face that he was like, okay, like I'll hear you out. But I don't think he's entirely convinced, again, because we know like what typically happens when Kendall goes for something, he fails spectacularly. But I think Frank might be open to at least listening to Kendall.
Yeah, I'm sure the many times that Kendall has kind of like directly or indirectly fucked him over, like I think those things keep playing in his head. But it is a sound idea, right? Like the new information about Mattson and Gojo and inflated numbers, and this is all crazy that they find this out at a party where they have invited a bunch of regulatory people. Like,
right. That's the crazy timing.
This show, goddamn, man. It is a sound plan. You know, is Kendall the one to execute it? I guess we'll see.
Right.
And what type of alliances can they really gather up to make this happen? Because Kendall's just outside of the Living Plus thing, like, which, depending on who you are, you know, was an entertaining mess. He's not really a great pitch man. Right, like he's trying to pitch Nate on, you know, getting the support of Jimenez and they on, you know, for having them come out on the side of regulation to like to further thwart the deal. But he does it in such like a very, what's the word?
He's just thirsty. Like you very can tell thirsty. He's so thirsty. It's pathetic.
Very thirsty. But he does that in such a horrible way that Nate just pretty much tells him, like, hey, I'm turned off by this. Like, this is a very uncomfortable conversation. I don't like the tenor of this conversation, so I'm going to leave. Like, so Kendall has a talent, really, for, like, taking the goodwill that he has with somebody and just completely pitching them the wrong way, right? And then kind of messing up that relationship. I don't know if Nate's going to be as amenable to, like, whatever the things that – you know, Kendall, you know, wants. So, like, is he the right pitch man for it, right? Even with a good idea, is Kendall the right person? Like, that's what we have to find out.
Yeah, the thing about Kendall is he's not good in one-on-one situations. It's like I was talking about with the people skills. Like, one-on-one, he's terrible because he does come off as thirsty. He does come off as, like, he just wants to get the deal done. There's no, you know, the guy's offering him condolences for his dad, and Kendall's, like, couldn't really care less. He just wants to let's get down to business. But when you put Kendall in front of an audience, that's when he really seems to shine. The presentation and the party in front of everybody, that's like when he does his best work. The problem is that's not how business is usually done. It's usually done in a back room between a couple of people. And that's where he's not good at that. So it's really interesting too. Because, unless there's a spotlight, you know, for him to perform, he doesn't fare too well when it's one-on-one.
It's those lack of people skills.
Yeah.
Right. It also, it's the inability to read a room correctly and just understand when is some, because Nate was clearly uncomfortable and he just kept going and only made that worse. Like, you can't be CEO with bad people skills. Like, I feel like that's in the job description.
Yeah. That's, or at the very least, you need to have people around you that can kind of be your mouthpiece, or, you know, can, that are good at that. And we found out that Ebba is not one of those people for Mattson, because she doesn't like talking to people, which I thought was a good touch. She was the only PR person in the world that doesn't like people. So
she thinks she me.
So the backdrop of this obviously is the election happening, and we still have not seen Jared Mencken. We saw him briefly in season three. We haven't seen him in this episode. We did find out, however, he is the conservative candidate that ATN is kind of backing in their like Fox News like way. And we find out at the beginning of the episode that with polling, he's 4% behind Jimenez. So he's not looking good. However, our guy, Connor Roy, who, you know, has got 1% of the vote in most states, except for Alaska, where he's exploding. He's at 4 or 5 or 6%. And we get a great kind of ongoing scene between Roman and Kendall. I mean, Roman and Connor, where Roman has been contacted by Mencken's team, and they're asking Roman to talk to his brother, try to get his brother to drop out of the race so that, you know, Connor's, you know, 1-2 or as high as 6% in Alaska, that maybe that vote will go to Mencken. And I do like how the talking about the options when Connor and Roman are discussing what are Connor's options if he decides to drop out of the race, and they pitch that, oh, well, there's some ambassador appointments that you could possibly be. And the first one he pitches is Mogadishu in Somalia. And I like how Connor's response was, it's a little car bomby. You know, like it's a little, he's like, you know, maybe, you know, tell him I don't want the UN. Like that's
some more of my favorite lines are in this scene.
That's more my vibration, the UN. Then Roman pitches, well, you know, what about Slovenia or Slovakia? He's like, I think I'm no on the slows, you know? And then his advisor asks about South Korea. And then Connor's like, or North Korea, you know, either one. And Roman's response is, they're not going to put you anywhere with nukes, you know. And Connor seems to be like deeply offended that, you know, he wouldn't be somewhere where they would nuclear power.
I'd be offended if they didn't put me somewhere.
Right, right. Yeah, Brittany mentioned in the chat Sokovia. Maybe he could, you know, Avengers Age of Ultron. He could have been the ambassador for Sokovia, but unfortunately, that's not a real place. But finally, the final option is Oman, which I wasn't familiar with this country. But as Connor says, it's either a poor man's Saudi Arabia or a rich man's Yemen. And then he tells Roman, hold on a second, let me check. Let me see what my woman thinks about Oman. Talking about Willa. First off, Marcy, what did you think about the negotiating between Roman and Connor here?
I loved it. I love how like cool Connor is right now. Yeah. The election is tomorrow and he doesn't seem very stressed out about it. He has like,
because he's got no chance.
Like he's just like, I'm just having a good time here at this tailgate. Like I went and visited Pop earlier today. Yeah. Right, like, you know, he's out there communing with his dead dad, and you know, that's how he chooses to start the day. And then he's like just chilling at the party. I loved it. You know, and I loved how confident he was too, right? Yeah. Like, no, like, I don't want to be placed in like Somalia, but like, let's go for the UN. Like, you know, kind of with Kendall, he's got some of these lofty goals and he's very confident, and I love it. And then I love how he involved his wife, right? You know, yeah. Like, it's like, hey, let's talk about this. And then I love that she was then giving her input too, right? So it was just like fun to just kind of see that and just kind of see Roman try to navigate it, right? Like you could tell that he was stressed out about it, but you know, just kind of thinking like, I don't think Connor should be placed in any of these posts, but like, let's try it out. So I really enjoyed that part with just like Connor.
The funniest lines of the episode to me, like I said, the one about the nukes, like that killed me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just highlights that there's really only one healthy relationship in this series, and it's Connor and Willa. Who knew? But like he respects her opinion. Like he increasingly treats her like an equal in a way. Like it's not one-to-one, but
right.
He at least gives her the respect to say, hey, I'm going to run this by her. Like, and not just be, hey, we're going to Oman because this is where I want to go. And you're just going to have to follow. Like there's respect there, you know? And even if it didn't originate from the most romantic of origins, there's something there between them to where they respect each other. And you can have a good relationship if there's mutual respect, right? With Tom and Shiv, you can see you can have everything. You can have the name, resume, all these things, and it doesn't matter if there's no mutual respect. So I love seeing Connor stand up to Roman, you know, even though he's older brother, but like he really could have beat the shit out of Roman and nobody would have batted an eye. But I would have beat the shit out of Roman. But I love him just kind of taking a moment and say, hey, this is you. I respect her, so you will respect her as well, right? Without saying it in those words. So that's the only healthy relationship that we have in this show, which says a lot.
Yeah, and I like how Willa basically, she convinces Connor not to drop out. She's like, you know, you put a lot of time and capital into this, you know, this campaign. Who knows? You know, anything could happen tomorrow. I mean, obviously they don't think they're going to win. But she also tells him, like, look, like you're dropping out for Menken. Like everyone in my family hates this guy. Like you can't do that. And then, you know, Roman, obviously, this is a tough Roman episode. We're going to talk about some more of his stuff in a little bit. But Roman, toward the end of the party, he's been going back and forth with Connor, you know, with these counter offers. Finally, he just like blows up, goes to him. He's like, hey, let's get this sorted out. Let's get this figured out. What are we going to do? And Connor tells him, like, no, I'm not dropping out. And then Roman blows up on him. He's like, you know, everyone in this room thinks you're a fucking joke. He's like, so tell your wife to shut the fuck up, cover her shoulders, and pack a fucking bag for Oman. And, you know, he basically says, you know what? Will is the only person that believes in him. And then they just leave and he's going to stick with it. And I like how Mattson's watching in the background and Mattson's like, well, you got my vote. You know, if I could vote. I just love it, man.
I would have fucking lost it if I was Connor. Like, Connor showed a lot of restraint.
Yeah,
he did. I also love when Mattson was like, hey, great family. like, who does this in the middle of a party in front of, like, somebody who's supposed to be acquiring your father's company? But super tough Roman episode. Like, that blow up there, again, we see a pattern of Roman where there's these interpersonal stressors that he has, you know, stressor with him and Joy. He and Joy, like all it takes is one thing to be said and he completely loses it. And then he gets super impulsive. I'm firing you, firing this person. And Roman is, you know, Roman's not intimidating in any type of way. No. The only thing he has is the privilege that comes from his name and the titles that are bestowed upon him because of said name. And when he can't use those plays, he just kind of just reacts like a petulant child, right? That blow up comes right after, you know, he tries to smooth, I don't even know if we can call it smoothing things over, but
right.
He assumes that he can smooth things over with Jerry because that's the pattern that he's always followed. Like, I blow up, I act impulsive, you come back because I'm Roman and I'm charming and so on and so forth. And she shuts that shit down. Like, I could not be prouder of Jerry. You know, I hope she bleeds that company for all hundreds of millions. Like, eye-watering sums, as she said. But I thought that the most interesting part of it was at the end where she's like, yeah, I could have done it for you. You know, I could have got you there. I could have coached you to be the person that you, you know, ultimately want to be, but you let you get in the way of that. And Roman's biggest fear is getting in his own way. He just can't stop it. He has no idea how to stop getting it in his own way because he can't be real with himself about his feelings and what's, you know, what's going through his head and his heart and so on and so forth. So it's a pattern we've been seeing with Roman. And since Logan died, that pattern is only intensified. So what else can he fuck up?
Yeah, it seems like the relationship with Jerry went south real fast. Like, it seemed like they were kind of, I mean, obviously it's a very weird kind of relationship they kind of had going, but it really kind of you know, went downhill fast. And you can tell he's trying to reconnect with her in his own weird way, but it just doesn't work. Marcy, what'd you think about that scene?
I loved it. Just like Tristan said, like, she wasn't going to take any more of his bullshit. Yeah. You know, and she kind of threatened him, like, you know, I can do whatever I want. I'm still gone. You don't own me. And if I see or hear anything that displeases me within the next 5 years, I will sue your ass and take all of your money. And I love that, how she just stood in her power. And, you know, she was like, and I will also, you know, share all of the pictures of your genitalia that I have. You know, I just loved that she pretty much has him by the balls, figuratively. But, you know, you kind of did it to yourself, Roman. So I am not sad for you. I'm all here for Jerry again, just like standing in her power and just not taking any more of, you know, Logan's bullshit because he's gone, your bullshit. I think she will thrive, like, being far away from this company. Like, I'm not concerned for her one bit.
Speaking of that, do we think this is the last we see of Jerry? Because it kind of sounded like a concluding scene for her, but like,
I hope we see more of her, like, you know, just being somewhere else, being more of a boss, being the boss somewhere else. So, no, I hope we see her again at least.
I still have her high on my next CEO of Waystar pool. So, hopefully.
I think we're going to see her again, at least like if there's a funeral, which there's a lot of funeral talk. There's more funeral talk in this episode. I think that's the next episode is certainly going to be about the election. It's called the title of the episode is America Decides. But then after that, one of the final two episodes will have to be some kind of a funeral episode, I would think. And so we'll see her there. But after that, I don't know. I mean, you know, we're running out of time and it's a short window of time for this season. So I hope we see her again. I mean, really, this episode to me, like, they're ending it at an unbelievable high point. But this is another reason why this episode was the reason why I think, like, man, this show could definitely go on another season. And I don't think it'd be overstaying its welcome. I know there's like a season 5 of the show. I mean, everyone who's watching now, we're watching season 5. You know what I mean? Like, they could do another season easily before it felt like it was getting old. And I mean, Tristan, something you've mentioned to us kind of privately about how, you know, Logan dying has been the best thing for this show. And that's so true. It's opened up. It's unlocked all these characters. I mean, they're the same characters, but now they have to react to this huge loss in not only their lives, but also in the company. And it's made a lot of these characters even more interesting. It's given them, you know, more time on the show also. So, you know, more playing time, if you will. So, yeah, man, this is a great episode. I just wish, like, there's only 3 episodes left. Like, we're running out of time, and this show could go on. I mean, this show could go on for 10 years, honestly, if it wanted to. Like, this could be a 10-season kind of show, but certainly they could do another season, and I don't think anybody's, like, bored of this show or ready for it to end. I certainly I'm not.
I do question how long it could go on without – I think Logan dying this season and ending this season – kind of gives like a very clear runway for how the show would end. And would I still watch a season 5? Absolutely. Be tuned in. But I do wonder, I'm just curious, what could the show do with a full season without Logan? And not because I don't think they can't, it's just because we haven't seen it, right? We've seen Logan die episode 3, and we're still really playing off that. You know, like, we still can't go an episode without mentioning Logan Roy. So, like, I wonder how that would look for a full season.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, they're making the decision they think is right. And I think, I mean, it's going to be an awesome finale. I'm no question about that. But it would be interesting to see how they would go forward. And you wouldn't have, you know, honestly, you wouldn't have to pack all that we've seen this season into... Like, if you gave us another season, you could stretch this out over some time because, you know, if every episode is a day in the season, you know, a day of these people's lives, they've had an insane 7-day period. You know, like, this is, the craziest 7 days that any person's ever lived. Like, you know, losing someone, you're traveling all over the world back and forth, and you're at these big events, and it's just like, it's insane. The schedule they keep up, most people couldn't keep, you know? So Marcy, what do you think about that?
I think if there were a season 5, I think it would have been interesting if they would have made it, you know, like one of the kids in, you know, the season at the top of Waystar, and then just kind of competing with the other kids about it. I think like that might have been interesting to see. And then just maybe Kendall, like finally believing in himself, not just, you know, half-assedly believing in himself, but then being able to have the follow through and the wisdom. I think he could do like some good things, but obviously like not. Or I think it would be interesting, like Jerry being on top somewhere and just kind of going against the Roys. That would have been great. You know, she takes Carolina along with her. They're just kind of like ruling somewhere else and just kind of like kicking ass, taking names and taking the Roys down. I think that would have been interesting to see for season 5.
Yeah. And you know, there's huge like spinoff potential with this show. I think like you could, I mean, if you did like a Roman Goes to Hollywood, like what happened in episode 6, you could take any of these characters and put them in their own, give them their own season, you know, and I think it would work out pretty well. I mean, it's obviously better when you have all of them together, especially in episodes like this where you have them all in the same room and you get all the interactions. But this is a show that could definitely continue, and I would love if they had a spinoff in a few years of, you know, taking like Cousin Greg. Like, what's Cousin Greg up to in 5 years? You know, like who wouldn't watch that show?
I definitely would watch Cousin Greg.
I would definitely watch it too.
Cousin Greg runs a theme park or some shit. Like, what can go wrong?
Yeah. Mr. Nephew. I love when he called him Mr. Nephew. That was so great. So to kind of close it out, let's talk a little bit about, and I mentioned this briefly a little bit ago, the funeral talk. So the episode opened with the Sibs having a breakfast. It was their their funeral management committee meeting. And, you know, Connor's been the one who's been like at the front of this because he's the one who's obviously going to see his dead dad every day. And he's been dealing with Marcia on, you know, what's happening with the funeral. And he mentions that, you know, there's a spot for somebody to speak, you know, like one of them needs to step up, and it really doesn't seem like any of them really want to do that. Kendall's like, well, I can do it, but you know, but then in the end we see that Roman, after, you know, Roman had a pretty bad episode at the very end of the episode, Roman's like, yeah, I'll do it. That's me. And that's kind of on brand for Roman, because he was the one who was the most kind of, in touch with his dad toward the end. And also, he seems like he's the one who most wanted their family to be a family. Marcy, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I don't know. It would make for great TV if he had another meltdown when he is speaking. I think that would be interesting to watch. Definitely sad to watch. But again, like we had somebody just mentioned, like Marcia, like, her kind of interaction there, like what if she decides to speak, or you know, just kind of like bringing her own little power struggles there. So yeah, I also cannot wait to see the will. I have a feeling that there's going to be some crazy shit in there too, if that note that Logan left gave us some crazy shit, right? Like, just did he underline it, did he cross it out, why is Greg there? I definitely want to see the craziness of the will. But I definitely think there's potential for another Roman breakdown if he does have to speak, because I think he, despite what he said, he hasn't pre-grieved. I think he has a lot of grief. I think Shiv also has a lot of grief when she blew up in Tom and, you know, told him, you took away the last 6 months I had with my dad. Well, that's not really accurate, because you were fighting with your dad, like, you know, at their mom's wedding. So it wasn't like they were on great terms, and you know, they just all of a sudden decided to be on bad terms. So I think it's just going to be kind of a shit show, and I'm kind of here for it.
I for one can't wait to hear the speech from Roman. I think this meltdown. I think the odds on that are 10-1. Like, I think Roman, because there's been all this emotional baggage that he's been carrying around silently, and it has to explode. It has to come out in some way. It's been coming out in certain ways, firing people, you know, impulsively, and a lot of the things that he says, and you know, he kind of, in a way, snapped at his father a little bit before he passed. Like, it's going to come out. All the hurt that Roman has experienced over the course of his life at the hands of his father, mother, siblings, whoever, like, it's going to come out. And right now, he's just kind of holding himself up through responsibilities and tasks and work stuff. But I think that funeral speech is going to be his final moment to, like, really let out the feelings that he's had towards his father, and the way that his father has treated him, treated siblings as a whole, whatever. I can almost guarantee a meltdown. I can't wait. I think there's a reason why the show positioned him, especially after this loser-ass episode that he had, as the one to give that speech, because to him it's like, this is the last thing that I can do well, you know, in the name of my father. And I think it's gonna be a shit show, man. I can't wait. Even though I get cringe, I get really cringy.
Yeah.
Like secondhand embarrassment on television, but that's something we're just gonna have to see.
Yeah, because you know, he's such a, you know, he's always like such a like a smart ass with everybody. And then to see him break down, I think that's gonna be, you know, that's gonna be a big moment in the season. And I'm looking forward to that too. As far as next week's episode, well, first off, what do y'all have any final thoughts before we talk about next week's episode? Marcy? Nope.
I thought it was funny that Tom like specifically wanted the waitresses and waiters to like not mention that the wine was German.
Right.
You're a
Matza, yeah, right.
You're also a cable news organization that people liken to like the Nazis. So, but yeah, besides that, I got nothing.
Yeah. Now, here, our comment here, Roxby mentioned about, that is something interesting. Marcia still knows about the waiter. I think her son still knows what's going on with that. So you do wonder, will the waiter stuff come back? You think that's what brings down Kendall? Because Kendall now, it seems like he's putting it together, and he, obviously he has dirt on Mattson thanks to Roman with his as he calls him, his rat fuckers who are finding out information. That could be the way, that could be something used against Kendall to knock him down a peg too.
Yeah, it was mentioned in the finale last season. It happened in the finale in season one. I'm pretty sure there's a parallel somewhere in there at the end of season two. Like, it has to come out.
And Marcia even threatened him during the wake. She was like, you know, hey, newsflash, I still remember what happened. And it was like very thinly veiled, but it was still there. So I think he'll kind of want to like walk a straight line when it comes to Marcia and just maybe doing what she wants. And she's still a shareholder, right? So she would probably also want this deal to go through because then she could get paid. But maybe she has thoughts on the Gojo deal going through or not.
It's a good point because she has, and we've seen her a couple of times, or I think we saw her in one episode this season. Maybe she was in two, but very brief appearances, so that would be it'd be interesting if she kind of was, you know, brought it back to what happened in season one. So yeah, two seats in the holding company. So I think one is for her, one for her is for her son, I believe, from what we learned in the first season. So that's interesting. Again, like, we only got three episodes left and we got an election happening. Like, that's what I'm saying, like, we have so much packed into, like, every episode of the show there's so much content packed in anyway. And that's what, I mean, if you've watched our podcast before, that's the same thing for like The Boys, it's the same thing for Game of Thrones and especially House of the Dragon. But this show is like times 10. There's just so much going on. Nothing's wasted. And there's just so many, there's so many ways this story could go. It really, like, I don't think I have a great handle on what's going to happen, except for I just think it's going to be a disaster. Like, that's, it'll just continue with what we've seen for all, for almost four seasons. So, looking ahead to next week, it is the election episode. Let's talk predictions. Marcy, what do you think is going to happen? Which candidate you think is going to win, Mencken or Jimenez? Mm-hmm. And what, how do you think that will play into the episode as far as like the actual result of the election?
Yeah. I mean, I love me a good election episode when it comes to like TV drama. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I have a feeling maybe Mencken's not going to win. So then like, where does ATN stand, right? If they're supposed to be the Fox News of like real life.
Yep.
If like the conservative MAGA ultra right wing candidate doesn't win, like, what are they going to do? I mean, I guess they have like 4 years to like spread fake news around, but I don't think Mencken's going to win. And I think that's going to make, I guess, some people at ATN very unhappy, although it seems like none of them really care who wins, right? Like we saw at this tailgate, like you had people from all of the different like news orgs and like different political points on the political spectrum. And they were just kind of like having fun. Like they're not like really invested in what happens. This is just like fun for them and like part of their job. So yeah, I don't think Mencken wins. I think something maybe interesting happens with Connor. Maybe he gets more of the vote than what he expected. So I'm just very interested to see what happens with the actual election rather than just like see what happens with the rest of the characters. Like I want to see just like a good election episode.
And I think we'll get a great election episode because I don't think we'll figure out who wins in this episode, at least maybe not until like the very, very end. But to quote the great American poet, Childish Gambino, this is America, which tells me like Mencken has a good chance of winning. I know he's down 4, right, you know, but just always assume the worst thing is going to happen. So I think Mencken is going to end up winning either through, you know, legitimate just comeback win or through some very nefarious deeds. But something's going to happen. Like I think Willa, I think what she said was kind of ominous. It's like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, so I think we're going to have a very event-filled election night episode. I think it's going to be a lot of chaos. And like Rox, I don't think we're going to get the final results until maybe the episode after or at the very, very, very end of next week's episode.
I think it might be like another 2016 where like the person that was behind in the polls ended up winning. So we kind of know what happened there. So keeping our fingers crossed for the succession universe.
I think that ATN is going to be pressured to declare Mencken the winner regardless if he won or not. I think we're going to see that next episode. I think ATN will be pressured to make a call that night, and they're going to call it for Mencken. And as far as maybe, I can see it either way. It really lines up where he could be seemingly he's going to lose going in, and then he ends up winning somehow, you know, like what happened in 2016. Or I could see it where he doesn't win, and what happened in 2020 just also kind of plays itself out where, you know, some outlets declare him the winner or they're, you know, the vote is very much contested. So, but again, that's why like we need more time. We need more time to like work this out. Like it's three episodes to do all this stuff and to finish this great show. So I don't know. I just don't feel like we have enough time.
I could also see like them, if that rings true where they have to decide, like they have to call a winner, like I could see that driving a bigger wedge between Roman and Shiv. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the comment here, what's the riot in the street with Roman in the preview? I guess I didn't notice that part from next week.
I didn't notice that either. But I mean, we didn't talk about it, but there was like a little firebombing.
In Arizona. Right.
That's going to come back. Like we've also been seeing like little patterns first with Sophie and the guy and then Arizona and, you know, go back and watch the preview, but Yeah, it's going to be some chaos surrounding this election. You know, like, this is a pretty big deal. Like, I know it's the election is in the background of the season, but, like, that's because we're viewing it through the lens of, like, these players at the top who really don't give a fuck what happens. But for the country, this is going to be a really chaotic thing. I can't wait.
Yeah, apparently that was actually in the mid-season preview. So we'd have to go back and watch that, because that was the mid-season preview. I think they did that like right. I mean, it would be after episode 5, but I think it was like, might have been after episode 4. They gave us the mid-season pretty quickly. I think it was like after Logan died is when they dropped that. So yeah, after episode 3. So yeah, and you know, that's the thing about the show is we're so like hyper-focused, or as you know, like as Kendall is talking about, it's hyper-local. He always wants to make things hyper-local. We're so hyper-focused on the characters that like in the backdrop, there's this big thing happening in the world or certainly in the country. And, you know, like it just feels like it's like a game that's being played or something, like it's a, you know, some random sporting event or something, and it's not. And now it'll be interesting to see how these characters react to something major happening in the world that they're involved in. That's going to be really interesting to see how they react to it, and you know what comes next. I can't wait. So now you know what we thought about the episode. We want to know what you think about this episode. And you know the best way to do that is to comment, like Roxby here did today. Comment in our live chat. You know, and if you're watching this now on YouTube or later, give us a like. Give it, you know, subscribe to the channel. We appreciate it. I think we're up to 260 subscribers now, so we appreciate everybody who's subscribed to this. And hey, tell a friend. Let them know. Like, tell your mom. Tell your mom to subscribe. Maybe she watched Succession, or maybe she's into Guardians of the Galaxy, because on Wednesday we're going to be reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So, you know, we're covering everything. But yeah, follow us on YouTube. That's the main place. But we're also on social media, so check us out there. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram at Watchers Basement. And hey, be sure to tag us with, use the hashtag Watchers Basement. We appreciate that also. And you know, if videos is not your thing, you can check us out on audio platforms. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast. We're on Stitcher. Give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate it. And yeah. We've got so much coming up. Again, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 review on Wednesday. We're continuing with Succession. We've got a Spider-Man animated movie coming up in June. We've got the Fast 10, the saga, the road begins to end, or whatever the saying is. There's going to be another one anyway. So we've got so much coming up. Hope you'll join us for the ride. So, as we're closing out, thanks again to Tristan and Marcy for joining me today. I'm Justin saying, hey, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.